You are listening to KTWHLP at 99.5 FM in Two Harbors, Minnesota.
Welcome to Living Through the End of Life. Stories and resources will come to your living room as we examine various aspects of living and dying well. This airs on Tuesday evenings at 7 p.m. The show replays on Sundays at 12:30 p.m. This week, I will be talking with Kevin Rodland, the nurse manager at Solvay Hospice House in Duluth, and Julie Luxinger, a health worker in a long-term care facility in Lake County. Both will share stories and information about what is offered, including during the pandemic. Join us. Today I have with me by phone Kevin Rodland. He is the nurse manager at Solvay House in Duluth. We've heard a lot about Solvay House through the stories that have been being told on this series. And Kevin, it is a pleasure to have you here to talk a little bit more about the Solvay House and related things. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Claudia.
Yes, well, it's a pleasure. Like I said, we keep hearing about Solvay House, and I just actually heard again this morning about it. We have a beloved community member who recently passed there, and so I was happy to hear that he was there, and I felt very confident that he was in good hands. Can you share with us what Solvay House is, what defines it as a hospice center, and just some basic information about it would be helpful.
Sure. Solvay Hospice House is the only hospice house in northern Minnesota. We have 12 private rooms. We have a house here that's like a home-like setting. We have a lot of common areas for our visitors and family members to use while they're here. We are staffed with nursing, RNs, LPNs, nursing assistants. We have a cook in-house that meets with all of our residents and asks each one at mealtime, what are you hungry for and how much? And we do try to prepare for that individual like. We have a housekeeper, we have a secretary, we have myself. As part of a hospice department, we also have volunteers who work in the house. They do a lot of direct kind of care with the building and for making treats and coffee and keeping up with the house plants and doing some light cleaning and kind of guiding our visitors while they're here where everything's at and what's available to them as well. Our program here is connected with Essentia Health Home Hospice. As a family or a patient who's admitted and enrolled into the hospice benefit, you're assigned a certain team with Essentia Health Hospice who follow you and your family when you're admitted to Solvay. So it's a nice connection of knowing people that you're already familiar and comfortable with in your care.
Yeah, it seems like having seamless care as people go from just medical care to palliative care to hospice seems so important in the relationships that are built. And then from what I understand, you just provide a welcoming place for people that can't be at home or would prefer not to be at home. And so you sort of are the framework and the sort of way to clear the path for the family and the person to have as good a passing as possible. And I would think, you know, I ask this to a lot of people who I interview on the station, how did you get involved in something like this? Most people probably don't grow up thinking I'm going to work at a hospice house and just all the things associated with that. And yet I can tell from your voice that you're just a very compassionate person and probably enjoy what you do.
Sure, I do. I was working at St. Mary's Medical Center. I worked there for years in a nursing role in the ICUs. I eventually took a position as a nurse manager and worked with several different areas in the hospital. My last several years, I worked with the inpatient oncology department and then also with the inpatient hospice unit, which was there at one point in time. And I found a lot of my education, my conferences, my learnings were really aiming towards end of life as I became more familiar with the population in end of life, patients who will have a disease process that cannot be cured. So I had a chance to come and work temporarily with Solvay, and yeah, I felt at home as soon as I stepped in the doors here. So lots of learning, but it's a time of life for people and their families that they deserve the dignity and compassion And that's what I saw in our employees and our volunteers and the team that works with our patients here.
It seems like when people near the end of life, their needs do become so individualized. And I mean, it was interesting you spoke about the food, because we've had a hospice nurse on talking about how people's food desires change or diminish and how important it is just to roll with whatever is going on for your dying loved one. And apparently you guys have that part figured out as well. And all the individualized spiritual, emotional, and physical needs coming in there.
We rely a lot on our patient, our families, on what their religious or cultural needs are, and work with the team to hopefully try to meet those needs as best as possible at end of life.
Yeah.
And food is, it's such a big, important part of our life. And a lot of families gather together around food, and they have stories around food. And so it is important to mention that.
Are they allowed to bring in their own food? And
they can. Families certainly can bring in food to prepare for themselves. They can prepare for the patient if they have specific likes. We have a facility where people could grill if they'd like and meet together and have lunch after grilling. Our patient requests, yes, they vary from anything, nothing to, you know, everything. And we try our best to meet that, and our cooks will prepare that food.
Yeah. And I don't quite know how to ask this, Kevin, but I think people are there for different lengths of time, clearly, and families. I would imagine, do they begin to bond with each other? Like, is there kind of a sense of community about the house itself? And then is there great feelings of just more intense relationships when once one person passes? I mean, maybe people are pretty good friends by then, and or maybe it's not like that at all. Maybe families really are more in tune with their own families. And
No, and it's different since COVID restrictions and limiting the number of the people in house and roaming around through the house versus staying primarily in your loved one's room. But we have a lot of commons areas, and people do meet. They do get together. They do get to know each other while they stay here at Solvay. There's a family kitchen area that we have coffee and homemade treats, and that's an area where there's a lot of relaxing and a lot of talking. And then it correlates a little bit to like the family waiting room in a hospital. You're there and you talk and you visit and you get to know each other. And after a length of stay, yes, people are more familiar with each other up here. And I think there is some satisfaction in having that community tie.
And then when someone gets very near passing, I would imagine there's just something almost sacred about the atmosphere. Like everybody kind of knows that someone is reaching their time.
Right. And when somebody does die, one of our rituals at Solvay is to escort the family, if they would like to a memorial lamp. The lamp is turned on. It's on for 24 hours after that person dies. Again, it's a show of respect as well as letting us remember that we were invited in to care for a person at a very intimate time of their life. And it's our way to say thank you. Mm-hmm. And it's also a place for family to come back if they would like to in the next 24 hours and spend some time at Solvay.
Hmm. What do you find, Kevin, is the sort of most powerful thing about working there? I mean, it just is an unusual environment to work in, one that I think most people would shy away from, but that I hear over and over again is just an incredibly powerful place to be with people.
Well, at Solvay, we can admit a hospice patient at three different levels of care. One is a respite care, and that's for a person who lives at home, has personal caregivers, and that caregiver needs some time away. They need a break to rejuvenate themselves. They need to have a meeting or something they need to attend. So that person can come stay at Solvay for up to 5 days.
Okay.
Then we have a general inpatient status, and the person is in hospice somewhere at their home, wherever that may be, and they're not able to control their symptoms. They're having pain that's uncontrolled or whatever the symptom may be, and instead of going to the hospital where they're maybe at risk of more tests or other procedures, we'll bring a patient up to Solvay and we work with the team to treat that symptom until they're pretty much back to baseline. Then they return to where they came from.
Yeah.
And residential is a stay where a person plans to come and live at Solvay until the end of their life. And that length of stay could be, you know, anywhere really. I think the benefit is at least maybe 2 weeks, 10 days. so everyone understands the program and takes advantage of the cares that are being given at Solvay from our team in the hospice. So to answer your question, I want to explain those 3 stays, because what do I see that's the most important, or what did I recognize early in my time at Solvay, and I think continues till now, is watching a family who is a caregiver for a person when they're admitted here, and it doesn't take more than a few hours to see their shoulders relax, to see their faces relax, to watch that family become a family again.
Hmm.
And I think that's very important. That's unique to hospice and to hospice health.
Yeah, it's not the norm. It's not necessarily what happens elsewhere.
Right, right. Just to see, yes, you know, a spouse become that loving spouse, and not worrying about all the other parts of care and medication passing or whatever physical care it may be.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a wonderful way of putting it, Kevin. Do any stories in particular come to mind that illustrate what you're talking about? I don't know if you are, you can share those or not. But
well, there's lots of stories. Boy, I don't know. I think seeing different things that have happened here. We've had weddings so their parents can be here to walk down the aisle.
Oh.
With them. We've had a family where they were able to bring up photographer and have family photos.
Oh.
And I think our facility, the Solvay Hospice House, is built to have those things happen.
Yes.
And our team really works to help assist to make it happen. So families do get that time to have meaningful time until the end of life, not just longer time. It's really important to have comfort and dignity and compassion, but to really live your life until you've lived your life.
Yes. And in other shows, we've also talked about sort of important conversations, the thank you, I love you, I forgive you.
Yes.
I'm sure that you have many staff there who are just very gifted at facilitating to ensure that those conversations happen if somebody needs them to happen. And and do you have, or sorry, go ahead.
No, and that's a good point, and it's not just our staff. I mean, we continue to work with our home hospice department and all the services of social worker and bereavement and grief support and chaplaincy and the RN team. That's all available to that patient and family here at Solvay still.
Mm.
So it is a big collaboration where if our team members sense or see or feel or have been asked a question, if we don't know, we have the resource in the rest of our team to bring that assistance to the patient and family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then you mentioned it a little bit, but I'm sure COVID has had a big effect on the way you functioned. Can you just, I mean, I'm sure there's obvious things, but how have you responded, and what are you still able to do, and have you found some alternatives as well?
Right. First off, I would say the biggest change in COVID is our house is very quiet.
Yeah.
There's not as many people. There's not as much of the visiting, the stories, the laughing, the volunteers in building, they bring a life of their own here. And so it's very different that way. We have, from the beginning of COVID, we did start restricting visitors. We did not really, per se, have a visitor policy. People were welcome pretty much all day long at the numbers that were somewhat reasonable. So we always had a pretty full house up here. So we restricted to one person at a time. We didn't restrict to the numbers of people per day, but one person at a time, because that allows us to help ensure that we had 6-foot social distancing, that we were able to screen all our visitors, to have them perform hand hygiene for safe guidelines, to get a mask to wear while they're in-house. So recently we went through, as restrictions loosened a little bit, we have increased our visitors to 2 people at a time.
Mm-hmm.
We increase that a little bit when a person is actively dying and allow for 3 people to come in at a time right now.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear you can do that. It warms my heart when I know the extent to which people are making sure that someone will be able to come in, and I just think it is such an important thing. So,
well, compassionate visits through CDC and Department of Health guidelines always ensured that there was a visit at end of life.
Okay.
And it's the different houses in Minnesota all responded differently to it. We follow, of course, Department of Health, but also the guidelines through Essentia Health that we have operational agreement through here at Solvay.
Hmm.
So we've loosened our restrictions. We do allow for a little more outdoor visit to go outside, maybe a short trip with family out in the car or something. We're allowing that again.
Mm-hmm.
We're working on a process of reintroducing our volunteers.
Yeah.
And that'll make a great difference. Like I say, they volunteer their time to come and support Solvay and our staff and our patients and families. And it's just a pleasure to have them here. And they just bring so much life to the building. So.
Yeah, I'm sure they will be greatly welcomed back.
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, so are there any misconceptions about Solvay House that you'd like to dispel? Or I'm also wondering if people could come visit if they're just,
sure,
they want to just learn more about it without necessarily committing.
Right. So I think it's not a myth or a misconception, but Solvay seems to be the best well-kept secret in the state.
Okay.
You know, a lot of people who come here and say, wow, this is wonderful. We've had a wonderful experience, but we never knew you existed. So I think for Solvay to have recognition that we are here and that we do serve the community is maybe the best kept secret.
Yeah.
And then misconception is that, one, we're only here to serve patients in the essential healthcare system.
That was one of my questions.
And that only the richer people who can afford to come can actually come to Solvay.
So,
and I think those are the two biggest things that we could talk about.
So I take it neither of those is true.
No. So Solvay House is open to admit any hospice-enrolled patients, but at this point in time, they need to change their hospice provider to Essentia Health.
Okay.
That's a matter of paperwork. It's not as big a deal as perhaps making the decision to leave your primary caregiver.
Yeah.
But that's the way it sits at this time.
Okay.
We've had people come from all over the country in different states who wanted to come back, maybe being closer to where they grew up, to where their family is, to be admitted into Solvay Hospice House.
Hmm.
So it's not difficult. There's a change that needs to be made, but everybody's welcome. And
I was wondering if it was especially good fit for somebody who is actually quite alone and doesn't have a good system set up to die at home with hospice.
Yes.
Is that one of the situations?
It is. That's very common.
Okay.
And where they may not have family or family locally. And when we call family, it could be just a great friend. It could be a neighbor. It doesn't have to be a relative. But for that person to come here and have the support of end of life and still be able to have their family or their friend from 25 years or their neighbor who cares for them to come and be part of that care, it's wonderful for that.
Yep. I can totally see how that would fit a very important need for the individual and the community, too. So it's just wonderful. And is there plenty of space? I would think you'd have a huge waiting list, but maybe you're right. It's just such a well-kept secret.
Right. No, and there's, I don't know if I call it a waiting list, but I think that's probably the term that's used. And many of those patients are thinking next week or the week after or when I really get closer and cannot stay at home any longer. So our waiting list isn't six people today waiting for beds. It's,
okay,
here's my plan. Next week my wife needs to have an appointment down in Minneapolis, so we're going to come here for 5 days for a respite stay.
I see. I can totally see how when someone's in hospice, life is still continuing on, and it can go for months and months and months. And so families have needs, and you are there at whatever level need to be met.
And then there's, immediate needs. Somebody, like I spoke earlier, who's not able to manage that symptom, who need to come right away, and we're able to accept that patient as well. So is there a waiting list? Yes. Does that mean people are being bumped backwards because of that? Not very often.
Okay. And if someone wanted to come visit, are they able to do that during COVID?
Yes.
Okay.
We're not requiring it to be a family member. We're not requiring to be vaccinated, but every person will be screened, will be asked to wash their hands and wear a mask while they're in the building.
Okay. And then do you want to give us either a website or an address somewhere where listeners can contact the Solvay House?
Our address is 801 Bayless Street in Duluth, Minnesota at 55811. And we do have a website, the Solvay Hospice House website. It can also be referenced through the Miller Dwan Foundation, who owns our building.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you so much. Is there anything that I have forgot to ask you you'd like to share before we sign off?
No, I don't think you've forgotten. I think we've added a little bit of our levels of care and how we connect with the home care team for continuity. I did have just a little anonymous quote. I'm not sure if it was from an employee here. It was in her handwriting, if she wrote it or if she found it from another quote, but I'm going to offer that at this time. And it was simple in handwriting. The end of life is just as important and beautiful as the beginning. And I think that sums up the care and
yes.
the passion that our employees and our volunteers and our team have at Solvay.
Yes, and we have spoken more than once about the connections between birth and death from this particular earth, and that is a wonderful quote. I'm speaking with Kevin Rodland. He is the nurse manager at Solvay House. Thank you again, Kevin, for joining us. So appreciate it.
Thank you.
You take care. Now we have a special interview with a friend of mine and also someone who works in a long-term care facility. Julie Luxinger is with me here. Thank you so much, Julie, for joining me and KTWH.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Yes. This interview is actually a result of conversations we've had in person over the year. You're in a long-term care facility. We all know that COVID has been a big deal for every long-term care facility. And so if you could give us a bit of a snapshot of the easy, the hard, you know, what's this been like? What have you learned? Just what's the story with long-term care facilities?
Sure. You know, the hardest part of COVID and long-term care is the fact that for many, many months, it was a challenge for families to be separated from their loved ones and
right.
for us healthcare workers to virtually be the families for our residents. We were literally the only people that they were seeing.
Yeah.
And in times of illness or in times of end of life, we may be their person. And finding ways to connect that person with their loved ones was a challenge. And we came up with some really creative ways. But that was the hardest part, you know, understanding
yeah.
that we are what they have in that moment.
Yeah, and I'm guessing the emotional output that you put out and hopefully were able to over an extended period would just be enormous. I mean, you are, like you said, you are becoming their family. You're becoming their closest ones and also trying to creatively figure out how they can still remain connected to their family. So I'm sure I speak for many when I just say thank you so much for your work this year. And can you give us some specifics about, you say you got creative. I'd love to hear what that means.
Well, there were a couple of things that we did that were really successful. And one is the work that we do with technology. I very quickly became an expert on iPads and FaceTime and Zoom and Skype and how we could do that effectively. Kind of funny because when our fleet of iPads arrived, we weren't exactly sure how to get everything up and running effectively. So I called my son, who's an engineer.
Oh, perfect.
And he literally FaceTimed me on my phone and helped me set everything up. So it's kind of funny how you reach out to the resources that you have in that moment to get things going. But I have had some amazing FaceTime visits with families. I had one visit where it was their, I believe, 60th anniversary, and they wanted to celebrate, and I set a gentleman up on FaceTime with his wife, and she read the letters that they had written back and forth when he was in the service.
Oh,
and I know the stories that they shared and the memories that that brought up were things that that resident and I could then talk about when she wasn't there, and it was just such a beautiful thing. And we worked with families, actually kind of coaching them on how to have a good visit. We actually had a Zoom class with family members on, okay, we have technology now, and this is what's hard about it, and this is what can make it easier. For example, one of the big things was they would want to have a FaceTime visit and have six people there together. And while that's awesome, it's really hard for a person, particularly if they have dementia or some other challenges that they're working with, it's really hard to focus on all these little faces on a screen right. and figure out what's going on.
Right.
So after a couple really hard parties on Zoom or FaceTime,
yeah.
we said, you know what, it's really awesome to have one-on-one.
Yeah.
And we started doing it that way. So it was definitely a learning curve for us and families, but we have made some really beautiful connections.
Wow. And I'm sure you just have such a sense of privilege of being in people's most intimate. I mean, you were anyway, I think, but you know, that couple, the 60th anniversary, they may have just shared together and now they're sharing with you as the conduit and just, wow, what a life experience.
It really is a privilege and a blessing to be with these folks and to share these moments. And there were times when I would sit end of life with someone and literally hold an iPad so that the family could be part of that moment. And as heartbreaking as it was pretty amazing to be that conduit and to be that person making these moments happen.
Wow. Yeah, that just deserves a pause to think about that. Oh, we are out of time, Julie. Thank you so much for joining us to share those stories and to just give us a sense of things were like in the long-term healthcare facilities, even at the height of the pandemic. So thank you so much, and I hope you can continue your good work.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for addressing this topic because it really is important. Thank you.
It is.
So many places this old soul has been, but the angels are calling,
calling me home.
But now the angels are calling,
calling me
Thank you for listening to Living Through the End of Life. Next week, we will air our final exploration. Due to its extraordinarily tender nature, this will be a 60-minute show. Val Yunin is mother to a 7-month-old baby girl who died suddenly of a brain tumor almost 20 years ago. Her story and her reflections will bring you to a very special place. I hope you can join us for this precious final show. A listing of books mentioned on today's show, as well as music you've heard, can be found on our website at ktwh.org. An extensive book list about death and dying, as well as area resources and archived copies of this series, can also be found there. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions, please contact us at the station 218-595-6195 or email me at Katya, K-A-T-Y-A, ktwh@gmail.com. All feedback is welcome. Living Through the End of Life is made possible by a team of volunteers. Thanks to Peg Zahorik, Ellen Huffschmidt, Julie Johnson, Jan Swanson, and Chris Belfield for their production support. To Paul Hansen for his website expertise, and Bruce the Moose for putting it all together on the program grid. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.